walk across the quad and, you know, like if I'm thinking on a given day, it's interesting what you said about decision making, because what I've learned is, you know, as a CEO, every single thing is just a decision. Like it just comes down to my quality and my capacity to make firm, you know, higher level decisions, right? And so even in that, like if I'm, you know, walking down the quad and I'm thinking to myself, like, okay, cool, boom. Like, I need engineers, there's engineering school. Like, I need designers, like, there's the school of design. Oh, I need this, whatever, you know, like, everything's just there and available. And I think that, you know, honestly, while college is like that, I kind of feel like the world is like that too, if we just open our eyes to know what we're looking for, right? I think a lot of times, you know, we, especially as, you know, people who have startups or people who are founders, you know, we think about the things that we don't have. Right? It's like, yo, like I can't do X, Y, and Z until I have this, right? But I really do think that, you know, the world and access is at our fingertips. It's just we have to, you know, ask the right questions and look in the right places.
What's up, guys? Welcome to episode 52 of the Work in Progress podcast. This interview is featuring Kelsey Davis. She's currently a senior at Syracuse University and the CEO and co-founder of The Collective. The Collective is an agency for creatives in college to come together and work on projects and give creatives, you know, currently in college that real life experience, the hands-on experience so that they can create in a structured environment like school. So you'll hear in this episode, Kelsey talks a lot about different ways of scaling, the importance of scalability, how to work through finding the right team members for a project. So I'd say this is a great episode for anyone listening that's looking into starting an agency or starting a startup in the media space. As you guys will hear, Kelsey is extremely intelligent and she's won a couple really exciting pitch competitions, including one from Google and more. So I know that this is just the beginning for Kelsey as well as her co-founder Ryan. So I'm excited to see what 2019 brings them, and I wouldn't be surprised if they're on the podcast again. Peace. It's really not about, well, who are you and how old are you? It's really how much time have you spent on a given platform?
I think my one piece of advice, especially for young people, is just like every day try and figure out how the world works.
Compared to changing the future of somebody and doing it for the greater good.
That is, in my opinion, the best idea I've ever come up with.
What's up, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Work in Progress podcast. Today, I'm with my guest, Kelsey Davis. She runs and operates The Collective, and I'll let her take the intro from here.
Yeah, so she said, my name is Kelsey Davis. I'm a senior at Syracuse University in Newhouse. I'm actually studying film and entrepreneurship right now, and I'm the CEO and co-founder of Collective. So Collective is a creative agency that develops creatives in partnership with universities in order to provide creative solutions for brands. And so we've been doing that for some time now. It's a crazy road that's growing very, very quickly. And so I'm just constantly in the space of learning and adjusting and iterating. So it's fun.
Nice. That's super exciting. So just like, I guess my perception of Collective was like, you guys are a one-time agency, but are you trying to build like a collective type of model within different universities?
Yeah. So you're definitely right when you say, you know, identifying Collective as an agency, almost like a one-stop shop agency, right? So from the brand perspective, we provide creative solutions for brands. Mm-hmm. And so brands come to us and say, hey, we're not performing specifically in the Gen Z millennial market space, even collegiate market space in the way that we would want to. And so then we sit down with brands and figure out creative strategy, content development, and then placement promotion that kind of aligns brands with their goals. And the way that we engine that process is by building a creative community. And so that's where you see the scaling part directly with universities. We found it successful for us to partner directly with universities to get access to their talent because there's a market for, you know, students who came to college already knowing how to do videos, right? Already knowing how to produce websites, how to make podcasts. You know, when they're at college, they're looking for an additional value that takes them outside of that landscape. And so that's what we do as an agency.
That's awesome. Yeah. So I guess like big picture thinking, right? Like maybe in like, I don't know, three to five years, like, are you hoping to have like different, like collective, different collectives within like different universities across the country?
Yeah. So I think still as a, looking at it almost like one agency in itself. But in terms of depth, definitely having almost like chapters, if you will, that exist in these different areas. We've seen it, you know, in a way of even looking how to mitigate costs on the brand side of things. If we have people who are on the ground, right, in all of these different markets that they're trying to serve, it's almost a way that brands can come to us directly and then we already have people on the ground. So in that case, it would still be, you know, housed under, you know, one collective, if you will. But in terms of the access, students at different universities will have more access to that knowledge and to that development, and then ultimately to those placements with those jobs. So it's more so, you know, less about like, oh, there's different collectives at different schools, and more so we're opening up different campuses to have access to what like collective is doing centrally.
Really cool. That's a really, really smart idea. I didn't even know you guys were doing that whole part of it. So that's really cool to learn. Yeah, it's super sick. So yeah, let's talk about kind of, you know, I guess like your most recent news. I saw on your Instagram, you won Black Girl Ventures. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Tell me about kind of like how that went down. How did you learn about it? Did you have to like apply to that competition?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there was an application process that I found out probably like a week before. Like the submission was due. And so we were actually in the process of preparing for Q's Tank, which is one of Syracuse's largest pitch festivals or business plan competitions. And so we had won that the week before. And so we were kind of like, you know, feeling good and started looking up, you know, what are other kind of pitch competitions in these areas, like specifically in the state of New York that we could tap into. We have a really great team of advisors. And so they have been really encouraging us to look into just the New York City tech space and figuring out how we could leverage the current traction that we have at the university to kind of get into that market. And so I actually came across an article on Forbes by someone named Shelley Bell, who is actually the founder of Black Girl Ventures. And it was just talking about kind of her process and her need or her, I guess, vision in terms of seeing the need to fund Black women co-founders and seeing, you know, the small ratios of money that's invested into our communities. And so looking at that, she created a tour in which she was traveling from, I think it was New York, D.C., Chicago, and Atlanta, I believe, giving these pitch competitions. And so it was an application. So we had to apply. And it came down to 8 teams. We were the youngest team. That happens frequently. and so it was interesting being around, you know, like, people in the actual like New York City tech space doing things. You know, I think sometimes in a college space, we can get trapped around what's going on just in our space. And so it was a really, really cool opportunity. And we just so happened to win. So it was awesome.
Nice. That's super sick. Yeah. Those pitch competitions are pretty crazy. I know my school had a couple and like, yeah, it's pretty legit that you guys won, two back to back. So that's awesome. Definitely
it's like
congrats.
A sport. You know, like it's really, it feels like a sport, and I like sports. So
yeah, definitely. So I know you're not alone in this process. Mm-hmm. You have a partner, Ryan Williams. What has his been like his part? How did you guys meet? Kind of tell the story of, you know, I guess now would be a perfect time to kind of tell the story of how you guys started building the collective and what it started off as initially.
Yeah. So, so Ryan, his chief operating officer, collective co-founder, grown to be my best friend, my brother. So Ryan actually met him officially back in January, February. We had known each other like through the years in school, but in terms of like actually like a working relationship, it started there. So the way that actually started was Collective was already like up and running at that time. But at the time it was just serving more so like a production company. So it just had the agency side of it, but in terms of the actual scalability or the actual business model, all of the infrastructure, it wasn't there yet. At the time, we were just, you know, a group of college students who were trying to make extra money on the weekends, and we knew how to make really dope content and work with brands. And so at that time, at the top of the year, you know, I was getting ready for summer, and so I asked Ryan to train me just to like start working out. And he was actually like a fitness influencer. So he was a certified personal trainer. He's a Marine. So he's very, very good with understanding systems and knowing an end goal and then knowing how to work backwards to build a roadmap and a plan and to actually integrate systems that work best for the end user. And so that was something that he didn't even realize at the time in the context of business. And so, you know, just like as time went on, he was training me. I was helping out with like content related things in terms of him growing as almost like an influencer, like a fitness influencer. And, you know, like as conversations just started, we kind of saw the synergy that could happen if, you know, we took my creative vision and everything that was already going on with Collective, but actually built in systems and an infrastructure that allowed it to ultimately be the scalable company that it is now. And so that's how we met. And I mean, like I said, that was really like the first quarter of 2018. And rounding up quarter four now, it's insane to see, you know, the progress that's happened kind of since that point.
Yeah, that's sick. That's super sick. So I guess like his job is to like, I guess, run the agency. And then are you handling like the creative side, and he's like handling like the operation side? Like, what does that breakdown look like?
Yeah. So, and it's actually interesting that you say that. I think that's what it started as, right? In terms of like me being kind of more of like the creative and him being more of like the systems operation guy. It really started as that. And I think that we've really, really grown into our roles, specifically as CEO and COO. So like I was just a freelancer who understood that, hey, it's smarter to build from a freelancer to an agency. But that's all I knew. I didn't understand anything about, you know, financial strategies and, you know, all of this like business startup lingo. I just knew that, you know, it was smarter and more efficient to run an agency model rather than the like the freelancer. And so I had the opportunity, you know, for my first 2 years of college to travel across the country every weekend, just shooting content for incredible brands, you know, and incredible artists, but I didn't actually, you know how to run a business. And so I think now looking at that, you know, what started as me kind of being with the whole like left brain, right brain, it's grown really into, I kind of cover everything externally in terms of just driving traffic to us and just driving sales and trying to kind of take us to the next step. And when it comes to, you know, outlining our vision and, you know, where we're taking the company. And then Ryan takes that vision and actually builds in the systems to make it happen. So he looks at me and says, yo, Kelsey, like that, we just can't do that. Like the thing that you want at this speed, like it can't happen, but this is how we get it done. Right. And so now it's grown into like an actual, you know, internal, external blend, which is really dope.
Yeah. Yeah. That's super sick. I mean, that's ideal. I think like when you're looking for business partners, like I feel like everyone, well, first of all, like there's not a lot of people that I guess go into a business with two people, or at least it doesn't seem like that, right? Like most successful entrepreneurs you see, it's always like there's like one person that's like the face, or there's just like that one person that started the company. But I think a lot of people, especially in the beginning, like when, if you are younger, like it's nice to have a good co-founder, because like they might like fulfill some of the skills that you're lacking, or like vice versa. So it's good that you guys were able to like find each other and like you guys complement each other well. Was there like any vetting that you did in that process to kind of identify, like when did the idea like shift from like, hey, this person's my personal trainer, to like, okay, I could like run a business with this person?
Yeah. So it actually happened. I was like really struggling in the process of trying to figure out kind of not necessarily like who that person was going to be, but more so what that thing was. Right. So like I, at the time, didn't even know that that meant, yo, like I'm bringing in another co-founder. You know, what that started as originally is I was just looking for somebody to actually run. It's crazy. Like I wanted to find somebody to essentially be like an ops type of person, but I didn't understand it in the context. Again, like I wasn't familiar with startup culture. I didn't understand it in the context of this is going to be my co-founder, this is going to be my COO. As we grew, it happened, like it came into that. And I think that's also really important, right? I think a lot of people will go out like seeking for very specific things, when a lot of times things do have to happen organically. And I think, again, that's one thing that attributed to kind of our synergy. Like nothing was ever really forced. We both saw certain opportunities in each other. And, you know, in looking at opportunity costs, looking at, you know, cost benefit, it just made sense. It just worked. And I think also, I think what made it valid is when we visited who's now our advisor, but at the time, Jonathan Jackson, co-founder of Blavity. You know, we went to go see him in New York City, first time we ever officially sat down for a meeting. And it was actually, John didn't know it, but it was Ryan and I's first time like publicly being together as kind of like the co's of Collective. And what was supposed to be a 30-minute meeting turned into a 3-hour meeting, ended up with John being our advisor and us like moving ahead. And so seeing, I guess, certain almost like affirmations, like not that, you know, was like a validation, more so just like, yo, it's affirming that what we're doing is right and we're moving in the right direction. And, you know, working with Ryan literally every single day, like they're constantly affirmations that it's right. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's sick. That's super sick. Cause like, yeah, it's always interesting too. Cause like you, like being in college too, you're surrounded by so many people like around your age. Right. But there's like such a difference from having a friend versus like having a co-founder or something. Completely. So, we can kind of talk about later on too, like how that like kind of, I guess like some changes that occurs too. Right. Yeah. Cause like that's super important. Like you have to like, this person's still your friend, but now you're going into business with them. Like it's a whole,
but I think
thing.
Even with that, like I don't think that Ryan and I started as friends. Right. Like even, and I think we were, this is just credit to, I guess, us as individuals. Like we've always been about our business in terms of whatever it is that we do. Right. So like before we were running Collective, we were both influencers in our own regard. And so even when we started working with each other, it was still a very transactional relationship. Like it wasn't like a friendship. It was like, hey, train me for free. I'll make content for free. You know, like this is what my content would cost. This is what my training would cost. All right, let's like match. Right. So like there was still like a level. And I think if anything, doing that and being consistent and committed to that plan and like inputting value in each other is where that started, right? Like a big thing for me, and this is even why, you know, we do what we do with Collective in terms of protecting creatives. Like a lot of times the creatives are the most, you know, like used group of people. And, you know, it's like we are shown value in terms of like, hey, what you do is dope, but like, yo, I'm not willing to pay for it, right? Like, and so I think showing that like, hey, like I believe in what you're doing enough to like put into it at the beginning is what kind of started that relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Already having that value up front just shows like at the very least, like you guys know that you're valuable to each other in this sense. And like that can ultimately transfer over. So do you guys have a team that you work with? Is it just you and Ryan running the show as of now? Like, what does that look like?
No, so we do have a team. So we have Ryan and I, who are co-founders, and then we have a director of marketing. We have someone who's managing our communications and also finance. And so as we're scaling very quickly, and while that's great, we're getting a lot of information. And you know, like I'm not an information management major, like Ryan is a nutrition major. And so in terms of actually like managing information and knowing the actual like processes, that's been difficult. And so being able to bring people in to like help manage communications, but then also extend everything we're doing from a marketing standpoint has been really, really helpful. And then on top of that, we obviously manage all the freelancers that we work with. And so that essentially works as our production team when we're working with client related things. And then we have our three incredible advisors.
So that's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, I guess like, it sounds like for you, your team is built out of like having a need, like, mm-hmm. you know, you realized you needed this certain person and then you sought them out. Mm-hmm. You know, how did you go about like finding out, like vetting the people, building that team, like where you feel like now you have a solid team that you can like, you know, go for if you need the finance side or the comm side?
Yeah. So this is actually something that I think I wasn't able to answer until this week. So Ryan's been working on this like full complete like strategy stuff for 2019. And in doing that, being really intentional and focusing literally on like going from vision statement and then working all the way down to task, right? So like everything that's going on in the company should directly go back up to the vision and go down to be like a task that's happening. And so in that process, you have goals that are being identified. You have, you know, strategic objectives, initiatives. And, you know, in being able to do that, by understanding that information first, you could then, you know, once you have your corporate strategy, you then look at your actual, you know, like business, like unit, like who are the, or not even who are the people, what are the roles, right? Like what are the actual roles that we need in order to accomplish these tasks? And what are the types of people we need who are going to actually see the vision to make that happen? And so I think, you know, a lot of people are very, so have all this stuff to say about like building a team, whatever. Like I look at it as like a very formulaic thing. You know, you have to believe in the vision and you have to be able to execute on the task. And those are two things that, again, like I said, are kind of on opposite ends of each other. And so when you find people that can, you know, work that full playing field, you know, that's where it's going to be successful. So for us, you know, being a startup, being young, being still in college, You know, people aren't joining the team because they're ready to get paid. You know, like people aren't joining the team, you know, for that reason. It's because they believe in the vision and they have the ability to execute the task. And I think that, you know, by us trusting in the team that we already have and then continuing, you know, to seek and hire going into 2019, those are always going to be the things that, you know, we identify with. And, you know, you have trials and errors, you know, being on a college campus, you know, trying to find team. But fortunately, that's something that we've been able to measure and like learn from and then iterate moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Super important to have the right team. I've been a part of some good teams and I've been a part of some not so good teams.
So what do you think made the like differences on that?
The differences on
whether it was a good team or a bad team. Like, what do you think?
For me, I think to start off with, like having like structured, like actually respecting everyone's role within the team is like really important, right? Because then you'll have certain people, right, that their role might be to, I don't know, like be the designer, right? But then they want to talk about like social media because, I mean, they have an eye, right? So they want to talk about the social media. But if you already have someone in charge of the social media, that person's opinion should have like a larger percentage weight in a decision being made. That's just like, I feel like, you know, if you're going to give someone the role, you can't just have the ability for other people to overstep that role. So I think it's really important just to trust in everyone's role and to have that always be present. And then like ultimately, I think like a good team, you know, wants to agree, at least like majority or everyone has to agree on the decision. But yeah, if you're going to give someone a specific role, their voice should just be amplified on that specific topic a little bit more, I think. Yeah. But it's interesting though, because like just in college, like you see so many talented people. So it's always interesting to see, you know, that's like the best place, I feel like, to find a team of people because they're all majoring on stuff that you want to.
And our advisors tell us all the time, like they joke, we were all together the other day, they were joking, they were like, they came up to Syracuse. Like, yo, like if I were on this college campus, like, do you know how many resources like I would be using right now? They were like, yo, like I would start 5 companies like while I'm an undergrad just because I can. Like if you walk across the quad and, you know, like if I'm thinking on a given day, it's interesting what you said about decision making, because what I've learned is, you know, as a CEO, every single thing is just a decision. Like it just comes down to my quality and my capacity to make firm, you know, higher level decisions, right? And so even in that, like if I'm, you know, walking down the quad and I'm thinking to myself, like, okay, cool, boom, like I need engineers, there's engineering school. Like I need designers, like there's the school of design. Oh, I need this, whatever, you know, like everything's just there and available. And I think that, you know, honestly, while college is like that, I kind of feel like the world is like that too. If we just open our eyes to know what we're looking for, right? Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times, you know, we, especially as, you know, people who have startups or people who are founders, you know, we think about the things that we don't have, right? It's like, yo, like I can't do X, Y, and Z until I have this, right? But I really do think that, you know, the world and access is at our fingertips. It's just, we have to, you know, ask the right questions and look in the right places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really well said. Really, really, really well said. All right. So let's move on to kind of where you guys are now in terms of working with different brands and companies. We've worked with brands like Coca-Cola and Land Rover. What has been the process to getting in touch with such notable brands, and what does it look when you're working with a huge brand like Coca-Cola?
Yeah. So the way that those kind of brand partnerships and brand clients originally came about were just through the work that we were doing when we were freelancers, right? So just having, fortunately, when we started Collective, we were already in the market in terms of, you know, again, like I said, already knowing how to work with clients, but also already having a roster of clients under our belt. And so because of that, you know, when it came to actually go to market in terms of what we were doing with Collective, at that point it was reference, right? At that point it was, you know, okay, well, I know this executive from this brand and I know that in June they always do X, Y, and Z. Or for us, we kind of came up kind of in a music space, right? So like once you work with one artist, you know, at a label, they're going to start requesting you for majority of their stuff. And then their label mate sees that. And then now you're on that. And then, you know, whatever from there. And I think also, you know, a lot of people look to network up. But for us, we've been really successful just like looking who's directly kind of on our level in our space. And as they've grown over the years, we've been able to grow with them. And so I think that's something that's really important when we're specifically looking at brands. You know, while we have worked with Coke and Land Rover, you know, that's not necessarily who we're directly targeting, right? You know, for us, we really like to grow with brands and actually work with them and being their actual like creative engine for everything it is that they're doing. And so for us, what we see that is an equal amount of value that we're, you know, seeing in each other when we're looking at brands. And so, yeah, I think the biggest thing is just, you know, building on the traction that already exists. And then every time you get an opportunity, killing that. And, you know, from that point, I believe that the work will speak from itself and the value will speak from itself.
Yeah, definitely. No, I like that. I like what you're saying there, because I have a similar like mission with this podcast. It's like, I have like those top guests I want to interview, but even those top guests, like usually are like the behind the scenes people for other big people. So it's like, I don't know. I also respect that too, like wanting to grow with the people you're investing in. Cause ultimately, like, I just want to highlight people that I genuinely believe in so that I can like interview them again in like a year from now and see where they're at. So
yeah,
I really respect that mentality. Yeah. So, you know, I know you guys have talked about, you know, in reference to the collective, you guys have talked about being creative in a structured environment like a university. You know, I think this is kind of funny because like some people perceive creativity and structure at opposite ends of the spectrum, but how do you feel like that balance comes to play? Do you feel like, you know, being in a university allows you to be more creative, or do you sometimes feel like, hey, if I didn't have school, maybe I could go fulfill my creative passions more, like more efficiently or more fulfillingly?
I think like everything, it comes down to balance and alignment, right? So, you know, like I said earlier, kids are going to college. Gen Z students are going to college now already knowing, you know, how to make creative content, already consuming more content than any other generation before them, right? Gen Z consumes 48% of all content that's online, right? And so because of that, when they go to school, they're looking for a different type of value than it's just the actual skill building. In that, right? While they know how to actually do the skills, they don't know necessarily how to scale that and know how to monetize and protect themselves in that process and know how to go from, hey, how do I make, you know, fun YouTube videos, you know, when I'm at home with my friends, to actually creating a campaign for a company that will implement this user generated content into what they're doing. Right. And so I think that is an extra level that, you know, they don't have that I think collective, you know, really brings in, right, to that level. And I think that the structure matters to a degree, right? You and I were talking, you know, before this, and like I told you, I was the person growing up that like, I was just always in trouble, right? Like I was just in the principal's office, you know, I was just like roaming the halls. I was just bored. I couldn't, you know, function in that certain environment, right? And I think that institutions make things structured so that it's scalable, right? So Syracuse University's job is to educate me over 4 years. And then when I graduate, you know, they would like me to get a job, be employed, whatever. The system that they use to do that efficiently at the highest rate is what we know as school. Right? Is the actual, like going to class, you know, 90 minutes, all that stuff. Right. I don't necessarily think that, well, I know for a fact, people don't think like that, especially creatives. Creatives just cannot optimally exist in that type of environment. They need, you know, levels and abilities to do what they want to do and be able to create how they want to create. But they need to still be able to do that in a safe way that they're not going to get hurt in that process. And so I think that that's something that's outside of the bandwidth of what, you know, the stereotypical systemized institution framework can give. But institutions still see that as a need, and institutions want to work with companies like ours in order to help their students. And so, you know, we look at that as ultimately three different categories that we serve, being, you know, creatives and brands, but also universities, and being able to actually work directly with universities in order to educate students in ways that they don't have the bandwidth to be able to do.
No, that's a really good point. And also, I think that also speaks on the idea of kind of a reason why a lot of creatives have just tended to like drop out of school is because like they're not feeling like they can, there's like, they didn't have something like the collective to like fulfill that void of like actually teaching them what they want to know. So yeah, if you can like bring that into schools, I think it's going to be really valuable, especially like more and more as like school is a topic that I feel like has been debated about now, because, you know, there's just like you keep hearing successful stories of people dropping out, or I guess we'll see, right? Because the people dropping out are still early in their careers, mm-hmm. but still, like, we all like have known, you know, successful founders who have dropped out of college. So yeah. it is going to be an interesting dynamic and to see how that progresses over time. Yeah. So for you, what has been, you know, maybe like the hardest part as well as the most rewarding part about starting this whole thing?
I would definitely say, and we actually, in making a SWOT analysis the other day, put this in that category, and that's school, right? Like, I think school is our biggest strength and weakness right now. You know, obviously, as we've talked about before, being in this environment, there's so many pros from that, especially with this specifically being the environment that we're serving. It's constantly research. We're literally just constantly in a state of research, whether that's walking to, you know, the dining hall or walking to whatever, like we can be gathering data and information on our users, which is incredible. But then again, right, being in school and, you know, having a startup that's growing quickly, you know, we travel very frequently. And so, you know, managing traveling, but then also, you know, oh, then it's midterms week. And then, oh, we're doing a conference this weekend. But then we also have a business plan competition and whatever, you know. But I think that, you know, Ryan and I have a certain fluidity to us that makes us successful regardless of the environment that we're in. And I think that ultimately, that fluidity is what we identify as finesse. And I think that as a company, you know, we kind of talk about the art of finesse and kind of how that's what makes creatives not only successful, but sustainable, being able to not burn out, doing things that, you know, are tedious and overworking when they can still get done, as well as like a lot of other things at a higher quality rate. And so I think a lot of that, again, is just being able to analyze your environment first, right? You can't, and this even goes to the school conversation, you can't beat a system that you don't know like how it works, but then also how it's monetized, right? And I think that's even, you know, with this whole like revamp of like activism era, right? There's a lot of people that are trying to overthrow systems that you don't know who's controlling those systems and how those systems are working and how those systems are funded and how those systems are monetized from. And so until you're able to actually, you know, be aware of all of that, you know, you're not going to actually be able to impact, you know, real change that you want to be able to do. And so for us, you know, school, it's a blessing and a curse. But I think, again, being able to work directly with the institution, like yesterday we had Thanksgiving dinner with like one of our like faculty, like somebody who's like working with us closely for Collective, who's just been a huge help. And being able to sit down with people that you don't necessarily agree with, being able to sit down at a table with people and say, hey, like, what you're doing is wrong. What you're doing is not helping students who look like me. What you're doing is not helping students who behave the way that I do and who are creative the way that I am. However, you have resources, and you ultimately are trying to see them be successful. How do we use our different strategies and our different plans and our different motivations to achieve everyone's goals? And so I think, you know, being able to sit down at those tables with people, specifically in this academic environment, is what, you know, is a blessing and a curse, but ultimately what's going to make us successful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good point. And yeah, finessing is definitely a skill. It's definitely just understanding everything like holistically is definitely something that I think a lot of people kind of overlook when they are trying to do it. And that's why they like fail ultimately, is because you're just trying to like run before you can even walk. And yeah, you don't know who's controlling everything. So having that greater picture is really important. And I know you guys recently put on a conference too. So if you want to like kind of talk about what that was all about and what that was like.
Yeah. So that was our Art of Finesse conference that we did. So we had over 100 people RSVP to the conference. We brought up our advisors who are Evan Robinson, co-founder of New York on Sec, Tiffany Bender, a senior producer from Teen Vogue, and then again, Jonathan Jackson, who's actually studying at Harvard right now, doing research on the profitability and the fight, like the value, the financial value of the Black voice. You know, you look at things like Black Twitter, we know that, you know, Black people have a voice and that are driving consumer sales and consumer dollars, but like, how do we verify that? How do we actually show brands that we matter? And so that's what he does. And so actually all three of them have really, really important things and positions to say and to kind of, you know, help students be able to understand how to finesse in this space. You know, the three of them, they're all in their 20s. They all graduated from college, but they all are killing it right now, kind of in this media tech space. And so we just brought them out to do a panel, but then they also did creative labs and workshops that we're actually packaging right now to be like a virtual experience that's going to be hosted on our platform online. And so our biggest thing is just giving, you know, more creatives at more universities access to what we're doing. And so even though, you know, 100 students at Syracuse University had access to that information and knowledge, we want to be able to scale that to everybody across the country. So, I mean, honestly, the world. So that's what we're in the process of doing right now, is just packaging that up to put that online for everybody.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So I guess like before we wrap up here, like you talk, like you've mentioned like scalability, right? A couple of times in this interview, like what do you feel like are some lessons you've learned when it comes to like scalability, aside from like understanding who's running the process in order to scale it? Like, what do you feel like when people are thinking about a business, right? And they're determining like, is this scalable? What are some things that they should like look for?
Yeah, I would definitely say, and this is, I think, a knock at me first before anyone else, but all ideas are not good ideas. And that is something that, you know, I pride myself in being like a creative, being, you know, completely like, no, like I think of all these dope things, right? But if your ideas don't actually have like plans that can then get you to the actual goal that you're trying to reach, just because it's cool or just because like it would be quote unquote a good idea or like a cool thing to do, doesn't mean that it's good for what we're trying to achieve underneath our current constraints right now. And so I think that is the biggest thing that I'm learning in terms of like, you know, okay, how do I take this idea that I know is in my mind a good idea and then package that and then articulate that to either my team or to my advisors or whatever, in a way that is succinct and achieves everyone's goals. I think that is, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes sense. It's really hard. Like I feel like, cause a lot of creative people do get ideas all the time. Like I get too many ideas and it's bad because like I'll just hop from like one thing to the other. And I think that's like something that a lot of creative people do. And it's like, I think ultimately like also having a team and having someone to like verify like, hey, like, is this good for you? Right. Because a good idea is good for multiple people. It's not just like self-serving. Yeah. So yeah, like having those checks in place. So I guess like creating like a check kind of system for yourself to like validate ideas is a good way to go as well. So, you know, I saw your Instagram, like you built a pretty good following on Instagram. And I guess, what are some advice that you might have to people, you know, in this online era? Do you think a personal brand is important when founding a company, when being a CEO of a company? And what are some personal brand tips that you could give people?
Yeah, I think personal brand, even before you even think about company, right? You have to think about yourself as an individual. And, you know, when you start a company, why are people going to look at that company and say you deserve to be running it? Right. I think that's a really, really big thing. You know, I think when people look at Collective and see what we do as an agency, and then they look at me and they see who I am as an individual and a CEO, I think that makes sense. Right. And I think that story or that narrative should be parallel across every platform that you're on, should be parallel across every friend group you're in, every circle, classroom, whatever, you know, whatever it is that you're building online that represents who you are as an individual should just make sense. And so I think, you know, a lot of people talk about, you know, all these personal branding tips and whatever. And it's like, yo, like, if your brand on social should look like whatever it is that you're trying to communicate. So like, if you want me to think that you're X, Y, and Z or whatever, I should be able to go to your brand and then immediately get that information. And so I think that you have to know what it is that you're actually trying to say. And that's the first thing, you know, in this huge influencer age and bubble space that is going to pop very soon. You know, I think a lot of people are trying to be in spaces where they're heard without knowing what it is they're saying. So instead of, you know, and that's natural, right? That's like human condition. That's how we are as people. We want to be heard. But I think, you know, we got to know what we're saying and then also know the specific audience that you're saying it to. And then from there, you know, that's going to give you all the answers in terms of like, what colors do I use? Like, what fonts do I use? Like, should I do a podcast? Like, should I make videos, should I, whatever. You know, I think all of that stuff comes after the fact, but I think people come into the space and look at that as the main thing. And I think that's where you fall off or you're not consistent with your brand or whatever, because you don't actually have one thing that you're trying to say. So I think that, you know, if you're trying to grow your brand, if you're trying to be an influencer, figure out what you want to say first, figure out who you want to say it to and figure out if they want to listen. And then from there, everything else, you know, if you, as much as you're listening to your audience, they're going to tell you the colors they care about. They're going to tell you the type of vibe they want. They're going to tell you when they want to listen to you or when they don't want to listen to you. And so have systems in place to, you know, have spaces where engagement can happen and where you can have feedback and learn and then iterate from that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Really great advice. Really great podcast. You did great.
No, you're awesome.
It was awesome. Really good questions. Not really good questions. That's on me. Really good answers. And, you know, I really just enjoyed this podcast because I think, you know, if there's anything that I've seen, like just from hearing you speak is like you're a very, it seems like you're a very self-aware person. I think that's like really what it comes down to at the end of the day, you know, understanding why you're going to go into building a personal brand, understanding why you're going to go into building a company. Like you have to have that self-awareness. So, I mean, it's something that a lot of young people are looking for. And if they're not looking for it, the first step in doing anything correctly is developing that self-awareness. And then it can give you the keys to like what you want to do. So yeah, thank you so much for coming on. But I also want to like ask you like, what is going to be, I guess, your plans for the future? Where do you see Collective in the next like coming months heading into 2019?
Yeah. So heading into 2019, the biggest thing, and I'll say this a million times, the biggest thing for us is access. So we're just in a position right now where we have access to everything in terms of like, oh, I want to learn how to do whatever, like, okay, Google, or I want to whatever. But there is a large segment of underrepresented creatives who do not have access to things, but that brands are desperately looking for, right? And so I think that our biggest thing going into 2019 is just continuing to build a community in which we are taking all this information, taking e-learning content, taking a lot of these development programs that we're building out right now, and then being able to give access to these creatives. And then, you know, through that, providing creative solutions for brands is the biggest thing. So just going into 2019, continuing to build community, continuing to develop creatives, and then just continuing to give access to people through Collective that otherwise wouldn't.
Sick. So where can people find you online and to like learn more about Collective?
Yeah. So you can Google Collective, C-L-L-C-T-V-E. So Collective with no vowels, but the E at the end. We are on social everywhere at The Collective, thecollective.com. Yeah. My name is Kelsey, at thecollective.com. So yeah, we want to hear from you guys. So find us and connect.
Cool. I'll have your social handles linked in the show notes below. Thank you so much for listening and for being on this podcast. Anyone that's listening, definitely subscribe, leave a review. It's always really helpful. Helps me get more listeners too. So that's always cool. And yeah, I'll catch you guys next time. Bye.